and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we're talking about The Borrower, which was shot in 1988, was completed in 1989, but sat on a shelf until 1991. And it's got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of head trauma, which means that we all love it. So I picked The Borrower. I kind of didn't remember why I picked The Borrower beyond being like, oh yeah, there's a lot of head trauma and it's kind of weird.
I know why you picked it. Can I tell you my, well, here, let me interject why I think you picked it.
Okay.
Because I think you got a copy of it through VHS PS at Mania last year, right?
I did.
Okay.
And then I watched it, and like while I was watching, I was like, ooh, we should do this. But then when I was watching it again, I'm like, I don't know why I picked this. So here's the strangest thing about this movie. Before we talk about the actual movie.
It has no plot.
This is the follow-up to Henry, the Portrait of a Serial Killer.
What?
It's the director's first movie was Henry, the Portrait of a Serial Killer, and then he followed it with The Borrower.
Okay. Is that why they made reference to that?
Yeah, that's movie? Why there's like a poster hanging on a phone.
Somebody's watching it on TV, right?
Well, yeah, no, someone's watching Garbage Pail Kids on TV.
Okay, I have that question. I wanted to make sure that was Garbage Pail Kids, yeah.
But there's Cannon Garbage Pail Kids, and then someone's like, he's watching Henry or something. I don't remember if they show it, but they definitely acknowledge that it's on.
Yeah, there is a mention or some sort of reference to Henry that I noticed too, and I was like, that's odd. But this whole movie is super odd that I was like, eh. You know, it's like you can't just have one odd thing. It all seems to be like it makes sense.
That's what's so weird about this movie is that it's a really fun concept. But it's still shot in that gritty Henry the Portrait of Serial Killer version of New York, like simultaneously, which is like really weird. Like,
it's this is one of the weirder movies I think we've discussed since Brian's joined. I mean, Brian, if something comes to mind that's weirder, I mean, whatever. But you let me know. I will say though that this is such a funny movie in the fact that the tone is really weird and dry. But it's literally an alien zombie killer comedy. Yeah. It has no, there's no plot. It's just
a strange, sleazy film. Like, it's like so weird on so many levels.
I love it. I really had a great time watching it. But if somebody was like, actually, I was talking to my buddy Steve, who surprisingly loves our podcast, which I love him for loving our podcast.
Thank you for listening, Steve.
but he's always like, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? And I'm like, well, you should probably just, you know, search back through the archives because we've done a lot of it. I was trying to explain to him what The Borrower is. And I was like, this is a really weird movie. There's no real plot. But let me just say it's kind of like a weird dry comedy about an alien that just takes people's heads off. And he was like, that sounds like it'd be right up your alley. And he put your in capital because he knows me well enough to know that I like that. This is not for everyone. This is definitely not a Horror Movie Night pick that anybody on the, like, it's not Bubba Hotep, you know?
You'll know what you're in for within the opening scene.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I feel like I disagree. Because I feel like the opening scene made me think that I was going to watch a different movie.
You thought you were going to watch Extro?
Yeah, like, I thought that I was in for a better movie by the opening scene.
No. Did you see the cover of this film? Of course that you're not in for a better movie.
Dude, that's the best part. The best part is the poster is that weird smile while he's wearing those stupid sunglasses.
Oh, it's
and when
so
it
good.
Happens in the movie, I'm like, that's the scene that they were like, that's the shot.
But it gets you so hype.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't see the poster. Actually, let me look it up because I don't know if the listeners know this, but I'm fortunately the laziest host on the show. So Matt does a lot of like the editing and Scott scours through the internet to find copies, so I literally just go on our Trello and just click a YouTube link and start the movie.
I like that though, because I like that it's easy for you, because we're really just trying to keep you around.
I'll tell you what, you know what isn't a horror movie, but if you type in The Borrower, looks like
The Borrowers.
The one with John Goodman like tied up by all the borrowers. It looks like a great 90s horror.
Yeah, you gotta search The Borrower 1991 or you're not gonna get the cover.
It's so funny that this movie sat on a shelf for 3 years.
He looks like Bobcat Goldthwait.
Well, it was also a lot of studios closing. Like the people who shot it, it closed out. Someone else bought it. They fell apart before it could come out. But then Canon Video came rolling in for the victory.
This is such a Canon film, though, that I would never have been surprised that this was Canon. Yeah.
It's more surprising that they purchased the movie and not that they produced the movie. The VHS PS copy that I have has only one trailer at the start, and it's for Delta Force 3.
Oh, God.
That's where Canon was in 91.
Seriously, somewhere John London just jizzed his pants.
So the other thing I have to call out real early on is – right after we have the strange opening where we've got like this giant cockroach bug creature or whatever talking to a human who apparently is a de-evolved alien into a human being who like...
Wait, where did that explanation come from?
That's what he said. He goes, you've been de-evolved into a human. And he's like, what?
Brian, did you hear that?
He talks like the kid from Malcolm in the Middle in the wheelchair when he's a human.
Jesus.
it's very like labored, heavy breathing. But then they go to the credits, and the makeup is done by Kevin Yeager, who's like, you know, the guy who did everything for Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors. Like, he's a really good makeup artist.
But the thing is that the makeup is killer in this movie, so that makes total sense.
That's what I mean. Whatever the budget was, I feel like a big chunk went to Kevin Yeager, because that first, like, mutation head explosion is fucking awesome.
This movie doesn't need a plot for me. Because literally all it is my favorite thing ever, which is head trauma, an alien, like a rubber suit monster. Truly, the only two things I give a fuck about on horror movie night, besides the two of you guys, is head trauma and rubber suit monsters. Give me those things and I am the happiest, most content person in the world for that hour and 10 minutes usually.
Yeah. So this movie, it's about an alien that is sent to Earth as punishment for him being a serial killer on his own planet. But for whatever reason, his body cannot contain the human head. So it always explodes and he has to replace it with a new head and then he mutates to match the body.
So I have a question here. So this movie is called The Borrower, but apparently these hyper-evolved aliens don't understand what that word means, because when you borrow something, it entails the idea of returning it, because it's been loaned to you. You can't return a head to the headless body, so these aliens are fucking idiots.
I mean, he kind of does, because when he kills that dude Bob, the one of the rednecks are awful in this movie, but he kills Bob, and then he's Bob for like a really long time, but then he kills Julian, who I don't understand why he killed Julian. He was the nice homeless guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But they say that they found Bob's head at the scene of Julian's murder. So, like, he is eventually returning
them.
No,
he's not returning them. He's discarding them. It should be called The Head Discarder. That was probably the original name for this movie. And then they were like, I don't know. It's not really working well with test audiences.
It sells the movie. I'd be I want to see what
this movie is too fun for its own good. Like, I love this film.
But the movie's got such a, like, we were talking about the weird tone stuff, and like, it's no more apparent than you have like this scene with the giant cockroach creature and the punished main titular borrower, and they get dropped off and they kill the rednecks and it's all this cool stuff. And then we're immediately cut to this weird cop.
That subplot sucks ass, but I don't care. I truly don't give a shit, because like the rest of this movie is so baller that it doesn't even matter.
I just think it's important for people to know that this alien, he doesn't have a thirst for blood. It's not like he's going around town and ripping off people's heads all willy nilly. He's just trying to like live a normal life, and like it's not even really a horror movie. He just gets himself into a weird situation. Yeah,
it's a sitcom.
He's just trying to live life, and then he's like, "Oh no, I lost my head, so I'm going to take this one." But he's not out to hurt anybody.
Yeah, he's, for being a serial murderer, he's not that bad of a bug.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I got a joke for you guys that is probably too obscure without me explaining it. But when the rednecks kill the one that's actually a bug, the first thing that comes to mind is wrong bug died. You guys ever seen Walk Hard?
Yeah.
The kid smoking, I can't tell if it's a Lucy or if it's a joint. Is it a hand-rolled cigarette or is it a joint that he's smoking in the car with his dad?
I can't tell, but I'm going to go with loose cigarette.
Okay. Is he the main character in Demonic Toys? Because I looked on the IMDb and he doesn't have a credit that I could find.
No, I don't think so.
He looks like
him,
though.
He's not cool enough to be. He
has a leather jacket, though, man.
Yeah, but I think that was from the set of Demonic Toys. I don't think that was just the actor bringing a leather jacket every role.
Dude, it's a full moon picture. You know nobody had clothing that wasn't their own on that set.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Nothing in this movie says that it was shot in 1988 more to me than the radio station when the one like punk rock girl is driving.
I love
is
her.
Just like so much glam metal. And I'm like, oh, 91. This was not what was on the radio anymore.
Yeah, not at all. But that's the funny thing about it is that, you know, we just did Bad Channels a couple weeks ago and Bad Channels had that same idea where it was like, it's 1991. Or was that 91?
Yeah, coming back. It was 92, but still.
92. They were like,
going to come back.
It wasn't that they were thinking he was going to come back. They were just milking that for all it was worth because that band, was it Fair Game? Is that what they were called?
Yeah, Fair Game. Well, and that's the thing. Like, at least at 91, even though this was shot, music was totally appropriate when it was shot in 88. In 91, depending on when it was, Nevermind has or has not dropped yet. By 92, there's two Pearl Jam albums, a Nirvana album, some Soundgarden, and some Alice in Chains. Grunge is there. Like, grunge exists already.
They were trying to make a timeless movie, and they're like, this grunge thing is going to die out in years, and it's not going to live on.
But hair metal will live forever. Yeah. You know, they made a timeless movie, but I think I might be in the minority for believing that.
Yeah, I agreed.
So he becomes a homeless man after killing the redneck.
Oh man, I love it. I love it so much. First of all, how do I even say this? before we get into him actually becoming a homeless person, subplot where the lady detective grabs that dude and she says that he is being arrested for rape, murder, and sodomy, which sodomy is any non-procreative act, if you did not know. So even a blowjob is technically sodomy. So I think it's very funny that 1989, they could still put that in and make it sound like cop jargon. But it's really, you know, this murderer is so weird. Murderer slash rapist is so weird because he offers cunnilingus to his hard-boiled detective adversary before trying to slice her, and then she like shoots him in the leg. He's like, oh, come on, lady, come on, give me a cigarette. Like, he's such a fucking asshole idiot.
So weird. So he's like worthless throughout most of this movie. And I kept like, it's like one of those things where it's like the only reason you're introducing this character is that eventually this alien's gonna probably
his head.
Get his head.
Yeah. But it doesn't even feel good when he takes the head.
No, and it's so last second. There's like 5 minutes left in the movie.
Two people get their heads taken in the last 5 minutes, and it's crazy pants.
Yeah.
They put no effort into this movie whatsoever. And so Scott's just making it more real than I realized originally on like how little effort. Like, so what book did you read on cop jargon? Well, I couldn't find it, but I read the Old Testament and a lot of people got charged for sodomy. Oh, let's throw that in.
So I have to say that my favorite part in this movie, right? So he's homeless. He goes to the homeless shelter.
Is it when he gets fucking wasted? Oh my God.
No. I was going to say there's the old dead mouse in the soup gag.
Oh, I love that gag. Classic.
Everyone loves it. But he takes Julian's head. And then
wait, you're mentioning, you're not mentioning the fact that he takes Julian's head because he gets fucking drunk.
Yeah,
and his alien body is like, I can't handle it.
What I love is after that happens, there's this shot, and I referred to it as the watching the sunrise introspective shot.
Oh yeah, it's so great.
He's like sitting on rocks, like leaning forward, just watching the sunrise, and it it looks like the shot at the end of a movie where a character's like realizing, you know what, I went through a lot of shit, but it was all worth it this moment.
But that's what's so great about this movie is that they don't give a shit about any like realities of plot or pacing or anything. I mean, ostensibly it's a bad film, but I had such a good time watching it.
So I think of all the heads he takes, though, my favorite is when he takes the doctor's head.
What? You're missing the dog's head.
No, the doctor's before the dog, my
friend. Oh, okay, okay.
Because he takes the doctor's head.
I truly can't keep it straight. How many heads are taken? Like eight?
Probably. About, I would say 6 to 8. So he takes the doctor's head, and then that's when we see this married couple that's just laying in bed with headphones watching Garbage Pail Kids. And they linger so long on that movie because I guess it's been sitting on the shelf at Canon at this time for a couple of years.
Oh, was that a Canon film too?
Oh, it was a Canon film.
What's the release year of Garbage Pail Kids?
I think 88. So I think this was a real push to tie something into something.
Well, but Wes, that's the thing, though. Did Canon Films make this movie?
No, but I'm willing to bet that when they bought the rights, they're like, hey, shove Garbage Pail Kids in there.
So did they add that?
Okay, 87, yeah. I think you could add that. Did you see how grainy and shitty that is?
Yeah,
on the TV?
Absolutely.
Like, that was. I think that's someone just throwing that over top of whatever other movie was there originally. Because no one is sitting there enjoying the musical number from Garbage Pail Kids in their bed. But
so, hey, I have a question for you. We got way past this, but how does the alien know how to drive?
I was so curious about that, too. I guess instinct. He's probably drove some spaceships. It's probably no different. My big question is, were the Screwheads a real band? Because
oh my god, wait, oh, I've got a note about that,
because they can't
fuck me, fuck you, fuck me, fuck you, fuck me, fuck you, fuck is the end of how that song goes.
Yeah, I wrote holy shit, this band sucks, but like the way that all of them deliver lines feels like they just got an actual band and was like, hey, you're just gonna play yourselves in this movie. Because not that like anybody's particularly great in their role in this movie, but they have no ability to deliver lines.
Are you kidding? Dude, listen to this. My good man, the sting of your humor is no more relevant than that of a butterfly's fart. That's how that is the crown fucking jewel in The Borrower. It's so good. This movie kills. These jokes kill.
So this is where I wrote, this whole movie is worth the price of admission just for this dog-headed man sequence.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but that also, the one of three female characters in this movie, like that girl who's doing the videotape, her eyebrows are so nice. Like, Brian, rewatch this just for that scene. Show it to Jane and see what she thinks. She'd be like, yeah, they look fucking great.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't notice them being bad, so they must be pretty decent. Because now I notice bad eyebrows now due to who I share a bed with.
You were going to say like something crude and then you're like, no.
I just heard him say doo-doo and I left. So then this movie, like, because the dog-headed thing happens.
It doesn't happen for long enough, though. It's so great.
It's so quick. And then so many things happen rapid fire at that point. Like, it's almost like someone's like, oh shit, we got to wrap it up.
But we still have like 15 minutes. Oh no, 10 minutes. Like, and both the alien and the rapist.
10 minutes, it's everything. That's what I mean. Like, in 10 minutes, they're just like, okay, so he's shot. So he goes here. We capture the rapist. He goes here. Get the pieces together. Come on, we only get. It's like, you could just make it a little longer. Like, it doesn't.
No, we have an hour and 10 minutes. We have to make it work.
I also, I don't know shit about guns, so maybe I'm completely off, but it feels like the one cop has way more bullets in that gun than humanly possible, because he is like just firing rounds off into so many headless bodies when they get to the hospital. And
well, is it a revolver? I don't remember.
I just remember thinking that there was an absurd amount of gunshots.
Well, I mean, if that's what's really going to break your suspension and disbelief, okay. But I'm guessing that it was not a revolver. And I believe that if you have a clip, it's 12 or 15.
Well, I'm assuming, I was like, shouldn't there only be like 6 or 7 in there?
Yeah, no. So I do have my suspension of disbelief was real stretched to the limit not broken, but stretched to the limit when the fact that no one was concerned that they found a monster alien hybrid with a dog's head. And then the forensic scientist
shows up.
So the forensic scientist is doing an autopsy while listening to opera and drinking red wine in the lab.
Yeah.
What's the issue?
I like the fact that you're yawning while I'm talking. We're not even a half an hour into talking about the borrower, and you're like,
Yeah, over it. So there's one thing that I have to say with this movie, because we've been just so hitting all the things that I wrote down, but the ending of this movie does not even remotely match the tone of the rest
of
this
movie. It's so dark.
It's so strange. And I'm just like, oh. And I don't know if it's supposed to be that that's what did happen, or that's what she's been like so traumatized by this that that's
no, that really happened.
Imagining it'll play out.
No, that's okay. That's how it happened. Like that she doesn't really have enough character. I guess there can be an argument if you want, but I'm pretty sure that she didn't have enough character development to have it be like, oh, she's having another one of her little dreams. No, it's literally what happened when they left, because the borrower never dies. It's amazing. They should have just incinerated the fucking body.
Yeah.
God, I love
this
film.
When will we learn, Scott?
Apparently next time, when they do the Borrower 2, when he has two heads. Oh!
And it's so much blood that splatters across that windshield, too, in that final shot. It's like an explosion of gore inside that.
Yeah. It's basically like in Idle Hands when the two kiss people are making out in the car.
Yeah. It's just like,
oh, so good.
Like a head burst.
This is one of these movies that if I had movie nights, I'd have to own it. I'd have to own it because it's so obscure. It's way more obscure. This was my first watch. Brian, I know it was your first watch. Matt,
absolutely.
Was it your second watch?
Third.
Okay, well, still.
I used to have it on a VHS tape years ago.
Well, like a ripped copy or an actual?
No. Like I bought I worked at a video store that had the VHS tape and I bought it.
Wait, you had the VHS version and you got rid of it?
I might still have it upstairs, actually.
Okay, if you have it.
I know.
You have a friend that needs it. Don't tell Megan that I own another VHS tape.
I would never just give, like, what am I going to give that to Goodwill? Like, that's going to go to like a friend, or it's going to go into a box that I sell at a convention.
Yeah, don't sell that at a convention. I got your copy of Ticks. I deserve your copy of The Borrower.
So I just don't even know what to think about this movie. But Brian.
Yes.
You threw a challenge your way. I was able to get to Beetlejuice in three moves. Were you able to match my moves?
No. I got Robert Dreyer, who was in Hear No Evil, with William Patterson, who was in Pacific Heights with Michael Keaton, who was in Beetlejuice.
Okay.
That's three, right?
That's four.
Okay.
So I don't remember her name, but the lead actress, the cop, is the demon in The Demon's Kiss in the movie Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which stars Christian Slater, who is in Heathers with Winona Ryder, who is in Beetlejuice.
I feel like Matt's is more like it's a weirder set of people, right?
Yeah, it's a weird set, but she looks so, the only reason I know is because she looked real familiar, and then I started looking through like what I knew her from. And saw that she was in Tales from the Dark Side. And I was like, oh, Christian Slater's in that. Heathers, right in the Beetlejuice. That's when I threw the gauntlet down at Brian. I was like, I got it. Let's see if you get it.
You have failed me for the last time.
So any other thoughts on The Borrower besides basically just telling listeners, hey, you should maybe check out The Borrower. This isn't on DVD or Blu-ray or anything.
It's on YouTube. If anybody asks on the in the group that and wants me to post the link, I absolutely will.
Yeah, but this is one where, like, you know, like Scream Factory, I'm just saying, like,
yeah, if you're gonna what did they just put out?
Well, they just put out The Howling 3, which made me real happy. So.
Yeah, like, why?
Because it's the best of the Howling movies.
The Howling 3?
Yeah, the marsupials, baby! I think it's the actor who played Julian is also in The Howling 6, The Freaks, which we've discussed in the previous episode.
It's such a pile of garbage, man.
Yeah, that's a bad one. That's a real bad one. But the marsupials, stay tuned, guys. The marsupials is some good shit.
And you know what else is great about that movie? It's on YouTube for free.
Well, Scream Factory's been grabbing a lot of like 50s horror movies lately, which has been getting me real excited. They got the Mole Men or the Mole People, and they got the Deadly Mantis and Tarantula all recently.
So that's I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. Hey, I'm always in the mood for a oversized monster or insect movie from the 50s. So send them my way, Scream.
Hey, Toxic here.
And Meridon, too.
We're the hosts of the Overleague podcast.
Are you a fan of Overwatch League or just a fan of Overwatch in general?
Well, if you are, we break down matches and all other Overwatch happenings, and we won't judge your main.
Tune in every other Tuesday to the Overleague on Geekscape, wherever you get your podcasts.
So what was your guys' double feature with this?
So, since this is a canon film, and it takes place in a hospital for the most part.
Oh my God, I know
this is
going.
This is, like Scott said, the weirdest movie that I've done since I've been on the show since Canon Films X-Ray, aka Hospital Massacre.
Are you serious? Would you put anybody through that?
Yes, I would. I would put someone through X-Ray more than I would put them through this movie, because this movie's not painful.
Yeah. I see you're a fucking man. You're a fucking sadist. I get it.
Yeah,
it's in the Kelly blood.
Says the sweetest fucking soft heart I've ever met.
Scott, what's your pick?
So this is, I don't think this is a great double feature, but I was kind of trying to think of what I like that has the most head trauma. And I really gotta go with Waxwork.
Okay.
But
okay.
It doesn't really fit. You know, it doesn't feel like a really good double feature. They're both pretty comedic. But I feel like Waxwork is just the most fun head trauma I can think of. I mean, The Blob would be cool because there's a lot of body trauma. And it's a killer alien. But I think Waxwork would be where I would go. And I'd start with the Waxwork and then do the Bartwork.
So I'm going to win this one, I think, because I thought for sure that both of you would go for this one. I'm pretty sure at least one, if not two of us, have already used this movie previously as a double feature. But I think watching The Borrower and then following it immediately with The Giver is like the perfect double feature.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
I like that. Because you got, or are you going to do Giver 2?
No, I would go with The Giver. As much as I like Giver 2, The Giver has way more of the like human transformation into these weird alien looking monsters. I mean, the monster at the beginning looks, the alien in the beginning of this movie looks like Mark Hamill's like half cockroach creature anyway.
Yep.
So maybe actually watch The Giver first and then just be like, look what happened to Mark Hamill. He became an alien. But yeah, I would go with The Giver. I mean, you don't need to give me a reason to watch The Giver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm always down to watch The Giver. But yeah, I'm shocked how short this episode was. But I also think that it was because there's so much. There's just so like, I think it's one of those movies that you just hit with so much energy that you just say all of the things that you want to say right away, and then there's really no room for anything.
I have to agree, because also I'm looking through my notes and I didn't really miss anything. I missed like a bunch.
I looked at my notes too, and I was like, well, I hit everything. I had two pages and we got it.
Yeah, like there are a couple things that you need to remember. Aliens hate the arcade sounds. You know, that's just kind of true. Yeah.
Which, blown away that they, I mean, I guess it was just a couldn't get the rights to show it, but the fact that there wasn't a Space Invaders shot or some joke like that.
Well,
like, I don't know what they're doing.
I can tell you from personal experience that Nintendo does not like to give permission for things, and so you just take it.
Hey, Scott, since we have some time on this episode, why would you know that about Nintendo?
Okay, I mean, you brought it up. I'm not going to say no. So, as probably everybody in the Patreon group knows, but not everybody that listens knows, I have an instrumental project called Console Crash that started strictly as metal covers of Nintendo music, soundtracks from Nintendo games. And I've been doing it for, I want to say, 6 years now. And over the course of doing the Console Crash material, I started with just covers and have branched out into writing material for a quote-unquote lost NES side-scroller, kind of like a Metroid or Mega Man game called Power Up. And it's about the main character fighting these demons so that he can gain a basically like the power up, the power glove, but demonically possessed power glove made out of human skin. And then when he gets it halfway through the game, the other half of the game is him fighting his internal demons because it's trying to make him crazy. And then he also has to fight the demons outside of himself. And then the end of the game is he, you know, triumphs over the external and internal demons, gets the glove off. And then, you know, that's the end of the game. But I just, I'm releasing the soundtrack in four pieces, as four EPs so that I can take my time and then say it's art. But it's, so Level 2 came out, I don't know when this is dropping, but it came out
late last month.
Yeah, late January it came out. So this is coming out in February, and I will post a link to my Bandcamp. It's up for free. I put all my music up for free because it's just a hobby, you know. Like if you want to pay a dollar or more, you can download and listen to it on your Bandcamp app. But if you want it for free, you can just download it and put it on your computer, your iPhone, your Android, whatever. But yeah, thank you for the shout out, Matt. I appreciate it.
Oh, and the artwork is fucking awesome on that one.
Thank you. Well, the thing is that all four of the EPs are, it's a quad tritch, you know, like a triptych is like where the three pieces interconnect. All mm-hmm. four of the pieces of the, all four EP covers create one full album cover.
So
and also when I'm done with all four of the EPs and they're all released, I will also do an additional 8-bit Famicom version. Like I have everything that I do for Console Crash in MIDI format. And so I'll just input the MIDI. I'll have to strip out a bunch of the layers and stuff because Famicom only lets you have, I want to say, 5 to 8 tracks. So I'll break it down into basically what it would have sounded like as a fake Nintendo game and release that as one full soundtrack.
You are easily the most creative of the three of us.
But, yeah. But I'm not the most driven.
I've got nothing.
The closest thing I ever made, the closest thing I ever made to an EP was 4 years ago, which Matt has seen this music that I made about 4 or 5 years ago when I just recorded my farts every day for 6 months.
Right, file this under. True. We had two songs on MySpace.
Oh yes, we did.
Okay, so yes,
so one was called "Pissing Out the Back Door."
Brian is like the most anally obsessed person. Oh my god, this dude is obsessed with his butthole. So two things. One, Brian, how can you say that you don't have dedication when you spent 6 months recording your farts? Secondly, file this project under shit that will never happen again as long as Jade is in your life. And third of all, what would your MySpace project with Matt be like? Like, how would that stack up to Matt's MySpace project with Shrop that was like, what was it called?
Bad Evil Robot Us is versus the Good Robot Us.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So the first song we made, right, was about the hardcore scene in our town. And we did My Name Is by Eminem. And it was just trashing the entire scene. So people enjoyed it.
Calling people by name.
Right? Calling people by name, right? So people enjoyed it because they're like, wow, this is really funny. I know what they're talking about. And then one day I was locked out of the house. So I peed right next to my front door and it tripped the, it like ended up shorting the electric wire because I landed on it and deflated Frosty. So we're like, let's write a song about this. And everyone's like, I have no idea what they're talking about right now.
That's so MySpace. So I can't even believe it.
It was all parodies. So the second one was a parody of Looking Out My Back Door by Creedence Clearwater Revival, but it was do pissing out the front door.
Oh, you said back door, pissing out the back door.
I think we sang about both.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I just remember the one line was anger in my mommy because outside the door it's muddy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was bad.
I still,
but the one
it.
Thing that Scott was wrong about in his breakdown is number two is not true whatsoever. Jade can't stop me. matter of fact, my sister and mom just left from the weekend, and I thought Jade was perfect. I didn't think anyone in my family would dislike Jade. But my sister definitely left thinking very less of Jade as a person for nothing other than the fact that she chooses to date.
I was wondering where you were going with that, but that's exactly where it should have ended. Yeah, good, good, very good. Because you're a man baby. Like, both of you guys are man babies in weird ways. I mean, I love you both, but I mean, Jade is a saint.
I
forget who it was. I bumped into someone who is a listener of the show, and they came up to me and they go, I just gotta let you know, I also like my spaghetti with just butter.
Oh, you fucking babies.
You know who else likes their spaghetti with just butters, Matt?
Who?
The main character from Atypical.
Brian, I have watched the show, but I know exactly. Oh, wow. That was the sickest. Nobody burns a Kelly like a Kelly burns a Kelly.
No.
Oh, man.
Kelly House is the one house missing from the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Be just the house of jesters and fools.
I would consider your house to be the, like, the house of the brown wedding.
So I will say that there's probably in like a month or so, right before the new season starts, Brian and I both decided to watch Game of Thrones recently, which is why when we eventually, or I guess the episode would have been out by now, when you hear last month's what did we watch this month, it's very, very short because neither one of us has really watched anything but Game of Thrones. But I will say that I had the realization while watching it recently that the whole show is basically just Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings if he just decided he wanted to use the gore from Dead Alive while he was making Lord of the Rings.
And to have, like, action and more of a storyline than Lord
people
of the Rings.
Walking. Yeah, this is a little bit more exciting. But anyway, that is so far off the topic of The Borrower from 1991, as picked by me. So, what can you do if you're a fan of the podcast? Let me say, well, you can go over to our Facebook page. You can hit up our Twitter account. You can check out our Instagram. All of those things are HMN Podcast. You can visit our website at hmnpodcast.com, where you can send us some emails, or you could send an email not using the website to us at hmnpodcast@gmail.com. Hop on that iTunes, give us a rating and review, because apparently it does wonders for us. That's what they tell me anyway, they being just the, you know, mythical they of the internet. And if you really, truly love what we put out there, always feel free to visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/HMN podcast, where you can donate some money and get some bonus episodes, us talking about all types of crazy shit. There's the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, where I review episodes of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. There's an extra episode every single month of the podcast. We did Robin Hood Men in Tights last month. Or no, this month. This month, Robin Hood Men in Tights. And then, you know, other random conversations and stuff. It's going to be fun. You're going to love it. Check it out. We will be back next week. It's Valentine's Day next week, listeners. And, you know, we're going to go classical. We're going to have an evening of theater, one could say. So, you know, come and grab your playbill, grab your tickets to see Carmen, hit up the opera, because we're going to be there next week. Check it out. Not the smoothest. Not my smoothest.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.